The state of North Carolina has seen new jobs created. That's also true of the U.S. as a whole. So why doesn't it feel like the economy is getting better? A new report out of NC State might shed some light on that. Taking a look at North Carolina specifically, an economist named Mike Walden has found a big increase in high-paying jobs and an even bigger increase in low-paying jobs, but the number of middle-income jobs has actually declined, and that is a trend that we're seeing across the board everywhere in the state. We're joined now by Patrick McHugh. He's a policy analyst at the North Carolina Budget and Tax Center to shed a little bit more light on this study and what it means and how we can avoid some of these troubling trends. Patrick, thanks for joining us today.
Oh, absolutely. Good to see you.
So how do we define high pay and middle pay and low pay the way that Walden defines it in this study?
Well, I mean, there's always this sort of question where you want to set the cut points. And to be quite honest, there's a variety of different ways you could do
it.
I mean, I think generally speaking, we're talking about sort of the distinction between low paying being a lot of service sector jobs, middle paying jobs are a lot of, you know, manufacturing, construction, transportation logistics, those kind of jobs, and then the high paying jobs are going to be, you know, a lot clustered in the sort of tech sectors, design, engineering, those kinds of positions.
So the tech sector jobs, the engineering jobs, we're seeing more of those. We're obviously seeing a lot more service jobs created, and that stuff in the middle is just, we're not seeing any gains, and the jobs that are there are kind of going away, right?
Yeah, that is, and that is sort of the beating heart of as you said, you know, there's this, I think a lot of folks feel like our economy, like, sure, we hear all these great headline numbers, mm-hmm. the unemployment rate is down, you know, we've created
NASDAQ
jobs.
NASDAQ hit a high today.
You know, the stock market is going crazy.
The tech sector, of course, yeah.
And yet, it doesn't really always jive with what we actually feel on the street. Mm-hmm. And this is the story behind that. And I think that's sort of the first takeaway for folks that are facing this tough labor market. It's not you. It's not only you. It's not just your community. This is widespread across the state. I think one of the things, and we can maybe talk a little bit more later about some of the sort of geographic distribution of this, is that one of the really important takeaways from this analysis that Dr. Walden did is that this is not limited to rural North Carolina, to small towns, or, you know, former manufacturing cities. I mean, this is happening across the board. I mean, virtually every city, I mean, almost every single city in North Carolina has seen low-paying jobs grow faster than middle-paying jobs. That includes places like Durham, mm-hmm. And Charlotte, and Asheville, and Winston-Salem, and, you know, Wilmington. I mean, places that we, on the surface, often kind of say, yeah, sure, they're doing great, they're fine. That's where those are the hot sectors of the economy, or the hot parts of the state. But even there, we are seeing a dwindling of actual middle-income job opportunities.
Speaking with Patrick McHugh, again, policy analyst at the NC Budget and Tax Center, you can get more on this study by visiting ncpolicywatch.com. They've got more numbers there, including charts. And, I mean, you're right. It's broken down by municipality and by county, and it's really just basically two types of municipalities. There's one where we're seeing more high-paying jobs, more low-paying jobs, and significantly fewer middle-income jobs. Like, those jobs are going away. And then the good municipalities where the economy is stronger, we're seeing middle income jobs grow, but not at the same rate. It's the high paying jobs and the low paying jobs that we're seeing a lot more of than the middle income jobs. So where are the hardest hit places, and which places have been mostly able to avoid this trend at least as much as possible?
Well, I don't think there's nowhere, unfortunately, that has been able to avoid this trend.
Yeah.
And I think we should say this is also a national trend.
Yes.
I mean, even though nationally, since 2001, we've added middle-paying jobs, it's mm-hmm. still a very paltry number of middle-paying jobs. So in some ways, what we're seeing here is not a North Carolina story. It's not even a national story. I mean, there's international, mm-hmm. You know, macroeconomic features to this. But it is worse here in North Carolina. And some of this has to do with the sort of historical geography of our economy in North Carolina. And so I'd say the places that have been hit the hardest are a lot of the legacy manufacturing communities where these middle-income jobs grew up through, you know, most of the 20th century. And we know that we've lost a lot of that to offshoring. We've lost a lot of it to automation. There's a lot of forces that have transformed the manufacturing sector from a labor-heavy human body heavy sector into something that's much more technology driven and requires therefore fewer people. So the communities that have been hit the hardest by this are those communities that were the most reliant on labor intensive manufacturing. But again, it's not just those communities that are seeing this trend going on.
Speaking with Patrick McHugh again, North Carolina Budget and Tax Center. So can we trace this trend back to a specific point in time? Is there a moment or like a rough time period when this kind of started to happen?
I don't know that we can really trace it back to a single moment. There's a lot of overlapping economic evolutions and trajectories that have happened. I mean, part of what happened is that, and part of what makes it hard to point to a specific moment is that while you had sort of nationally and certainly in North Carolina through basically the post-World War II era is when we started to see really rapid deployment of technology and manufacturing, the automation of manufacturing. That was probably the first wave that you started to see it. Because if you look at the immediate post-war period, and there's a lot of economists that will debate about whether this was an anomaly in the post-war period or whether this was some normal that we should be trying to get back to, you had a lot of wage growth. Even in the early phases of technology rollout and manufacturing, you still had workers taking home a good chunk of the value of what that technology was allowing them to produce. But over time, we did see the sort of undermining of the labor force necessary for manufacturing. At the same time, though, in North Carolina, we, of course, were also adding a high technology sector. And I would say in some ways that kind of clouded the view. It made it harder to see what was happening in the middle class because you had these bright spots. You had the RTPs of North Carolina coming online and all these exciting new jobs being created. And so it was sort of easy for a while to kind of ignore or downplay and say, well, we're just going to replace these manufacturing jobs with new jobs in tech. And while there's some truth to that, unfortunately, a lot of times it's not enough jobs, just in raw numbers, and the jobs aren't located often in places where the folks that are losing the positions in manufacturing are live. And thirdly, a lot of the skills that you would need to get access to those high-paying jobs are not the same skills that you would have developed over a career in working in manufacturing. Even a very skilled, technician in the manufacturing sector isn't necessarily well-suited to jump right into, $150,000 a year job in tech.
Yeah, and I was thinking about that. I always think about this in terms of like the sort of Rust Belt areas or the coal mining areas in West Virginia and in Pennsylvania and Kentucky and that, where they're losing those jobs and presumably they're not coming back. I always think, well, just replace it with high tech, but it's those jobs, even if created, aren't going to help the people who are losing their jobs. Right?
And that's absolutely correct.
Again, speaking with Patrick McHugh. So, what is the effect? So, we're losing middle class jobs. We're gaining the high paying jobs and the low paying jobs. What about that is particularly concerning?
Well, a couple of things. So, one of the first things that this study shows is that it essentially is starting to roll back generations of progress that North Carolina specifically had been making in catching up to the national average wage. The story of the 20th century in North Carolina is largely a story of us evolving into a more modern economy, moving from an agrarian-based economy first into a manufacturing economy and then to a diversifying into a technology-driven economy. And along the way, we were slowly catching up with the national rate of income. Unfortunately, what has happened over the last several years is that we're starting to give some of those gains back. Because the hammer has fallen harder on the middle class here in North Carolina than it has nationally, we've seen the per worker income in North Carolina, the per worker wages in North Carolina, which had gotten, I think, up to 95% of the national average just before the Great Recession, have slid back substantially. So we're now back down into the 80s, the mid 80s. So that's one of the first consequences, is that we're losing some of the progress that we'd made over the last several generations. I think the second thing that's particularly worrisome to me about this is that these aren't just middle-paying jobs that we're losing. They're also, in some ways, the middle rungs in the income ladder from a skill and educational point of view, as we were talking about. These were jobs that you could come in as a starting, line worker and on the job or through apprenticeships, a little bit of training on the side, get yourself into a position, often with the same company, that would pay enough to support a family. This has been baked into our understanding of the labor market in some ways that we're often not even fully aware of, that we sort of accept really low wages at the low end of the wage scale on the philosophy that, well, that's just where you start. You flip burgers for a little while, you get a few job, you know, a few skills, you move into another job, and then you're going to be able to, you know, you demonstrate you're a good, reliable employee, they're going to give you the training necessary to get you into a better position. And unfortunately, what we're seeing is that pathway is narrowing and becoming much, much more difficult. So not only are folks that used to be in middle class jobs finding it harder to get by, we're kind of closing the door on folks that are entering the labor market right now. And what we're seeing, I mean, I think a lot of folks know very well, you know, we're seeing college graduates stuck in service sector jobs that they just can't get out of because there isn't that next step. And so in some ways, to me, one of the dangers that this raises, we talk a lot about the sort of income inequality between the 1% and everybody else, and I think that's a very, you know, important issue. This also sort of speaks to a second bifurcation of the labor force, you know, that we could end up in a world where you've got a bunch of folks doing very, very well in technology and design and engineering that have never really experienced what folks at the other end of the labor spectrum that are stuck in service sector jobs are up against. Mm-hmm. And that's not just bad for our economy. I think it's bad for our republic. It's bad for our discourse. It makes it harder for us to understand the ways in which we are interdependent and rely on one another.
And we're talking about this in terms of income, but it's benefits as well. I mean, we're just having the healthcare debate in Washington. Like, that enters into this too.
It absolutely does. And I think there's sort of two dimensions about, you know, how do you address this? One is how you grow more middle-paying jobs, and that's not an easy answer. And particularly given that this is not something that's unique to North Carolina or even the United States, we have to acknowledge that we also need to think hard about what to do to support folks that are stuck in low-paying jobs. And I think this really underscores how irresponsible it is to talk idly about just allowing Obamacare to implode. Mm-hmm. You know, because we're talking about jobs, as you say, these aren't just low-paying, they're low-benefit jobs. A lot of these jobs don't have health care. I think a lot of folks may not sort of fully realize that our system of employer-based healthcare is based in essentially the World War II economy, where half of the labor force was off fighting in the war, and where companies were constrained by the federal government about how much they could actually pay their employees. They didn't want companies that were supporting the war effort fighting with each other in terms of wages. And that's when we started to see employer-based healthcare as a benefit that was one way that companies could try to attract talented workers. Well, when you have a labor market that's as soft as ours is, and I think this is the other thing that's going on under the hood here, is that we have fewer people just as a share of our economy working in North Carolina mm-hmm. than we did 10 or 15 years ago. That makes it a lot easier for employers to continue paying as low wages as they can pay and to not have to offer benefits. And so that means that a growing chunk of our labor market is stuck in jobs that are never going to have benefits attached to them. And so if we're going to talk about a system that actually provides, you know, health care as a basic right to people, we have to acknowledge that a lot of these folks, at least in the near term and probably in the medium term, simply aren't going to get it through their employer. And there's just no two ways about that.
Again, you can visit ncpolicywatch.com if you're listening out there and get more information on this study. We're speaking with Patrick McHugh at the NC Budget and Tax Center. So you kind of touched on this already in kind of the pessimistic way, but what reverses this trend, if anything? What can policymakers do? What needs to happen in the economy in order to pull back on this, if anything?
Well, I'm not going to sit here and act like there's a simple answer.
So I
to this.
Added the if anything.
Yes.
Yeah.
I do. I mean, there are things that can certainly be done. Mm-hmm. And there are some macroeconomic questions that are out there in terms of when are companies going to start investing in innovation again? I mean, we've actually, as much as we talk about how much technology has revolutionized the business sector, the actual sort of gains, economic gains, in terms of the value delivered to market from the innovations that companies are rolling out right now are really paltry compared to previous eras. Mm-hmm. And without productivity growth, you don't get wage growth. Mm-hmm. So one of the macroeconomic questions is, how do you sort of get productivity growth going on? I'm going to tell you, there's not an easy answer to that.
Right, right.
So I think we just touched for a moment on, well, what do you do for the folks that are stuck, kind of, you know, with no easy way out? I do think there are a number of things that we can look at that may not be complete panaceas to this issue, but that can get us some of the way there. I do think we need to empower local communities again to make some decisions about setting wage scales. You know, we live in a state where the authority of local governments to set minimum wages for the entire economy or even for contractors that contract with local governments has been taken away over the last several years. So you can't even have a place like a Chapel Hill or a Durham where expenses are high, where you have a pretty robust job market. You can't even experiment with raising minimum wages there. Because the state legislature has removed that authority. So that's one thing. And I'm not saying that that's the complete answer, but I think that would certainly allow at least some experimentation to try to address this, because these are different types of challenges in different locations. And I think we're also going to have to at least entertain for the time being, what do we do from an income support point of view? You know, we used to have a state-level earned income tax credit that would essentially give a tax rebate to folks at the low end of the labor market. Again, it's not a solution to not having a middle-paying job, but at least it helps cover some of that gap and keep some families solvent. The longer that this goes on, the more we're going to have to entertain those sorts of things. And you've got some folks out there, I'm not advocating for this, you know, today and here, but you have some folks looking down the road, particularly with automation coming along, that are starting to say, we're going to have to entertain some kind of guaranteed minimum income nationally because the labor market is just not going to supply that. Now, I don't think we're quite there yet, but that's the conversation we're headed towards if we don't figure out some way of addressing
it. And a couple of really fascinating arguments, and there's some articles online about this where there's people, you wouldn't expect people on the right to be making this argument, but that's actually a bipartisan thing that people on the right are talking about too, in addition to people on the left, for probably exactly this reason.
I think it is. I think it's, we'll see how bipartisan it remains.
Well, right.
You know, when it becomes less abstract.
It won't be bipartisan when it's a proposal, yeah, but it's interesting.
But I think it is the fact that it's something that can even be breathed out loud mm-hmm. in the United States speaks to how long this trend has been going on, because this is not new. I mean, this has been going on for 40 years in some ways. And how difficult a trend it is to address, that you have, you know, people who are looking at the sobering reality in front of us from very different points of view, coming to some pretty, you know, pretty extreme conclusions about where we may be headed in terms of a policy solution.
People who want to know more about this, what else do they need to know? What else should people be doing? And where can people go to find out more?
Well, I think the central thing that, particularly here in the state, that we have to do is, first of all, and again, I think this is important for folks to remember that, again, you're not alone. There's a lot of folks in North Carolina that are facing these same odds, and you don't have to be living in a community that we have, you know, too easily dismissed as economically backward or, you know, depressed. This is happening everywhere. Mm-hmm. So there's common cause across some very, very different types of communities in North Carolina. So I think that's the first thing, is start to realize that this is a crisis that spreads across ideological boundaries, across geographic boundaries, across industry boundaries. So I think that's the first thing. And the second thing is to make sure that your elected representatives know that we need an actual conversation about this. We need to actually look at this. I mean, we've had, for the last several years, it's more or less boiled down, you know, the sort of narrative coming out of Raleigh is more or less boiled down to more tax cuts, fewer regulations, mm-hmm. and then dot, dot, dot. Growth.
Step two profit.
Yeah, step two profit, yeah. Exactly. But unfortunately, that's just not the case, mm-hmm. right? We've seen in these data that that's not working. It's not delivering the solution. So I think that's the second thing that we need to get to, is an acknowledgement that we have a problem on our hands that is deeper than the responses that have been provided thus far.
Again, ncpolicywatch.com is the website for Policy Watch. Go there and get more information on the study out of NC State. For more from the NC Budget and Tax Center, same website. Patrick McHugh, thank you so much.
Thank you.